This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening this afternoon. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the Cincinnati Edition studio Molly Wellman, mixologist extraordinaire here in Cincinnati. You may have heard recently that Molly, who is the owner of Japs and the Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, co-owner of Neons, is opening a new place, Myrtle's Punch House. That will be in East Walnut Hills. She's here to talk about that and her book, Handcrafted Cocktails, The Mixologist's Guide to Classic Drinks for Morning, Noon, and Night. Welcome back, Molly. Glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
let me see. You started out opening Japs, and then the Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar came along, and then Neons, and now in yet another one. Just a natural growth. I thought maybe after one you'd decide, well, this is enough.
Who needs sleep? You know? I'm a big believer in, and contributing to the city, and the best way I know how to do that is through opening businesses. I mean, it's kind of a simple thing.
Well, I think I saw a little film City Stories website that talked had you talking about the bar, and you said, really, like Japs, it belongs to the city. I'm just lucky enough to mix drinks.
Exactly. It's very true. I mean, anybody who comes up to me and says, thank you, Molly, for opening this place, and I always say, it's for you. I mean, you're the one that makes it. So I'm just lucky enough to have a place to go and be able to have fun and make drinks for people and make people happy. So that's really what it's all about. I mean, I have the best job ever. Let me tell you.
Many people would agree. Well, in this day and age is running a bar like Japs or the Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar feasible? I mean, obviously you're doing well if you're opening Myrtle's Punch House.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. And that's to thank everybody in Cincinnati who's come through Japs and really appreciates it and talks about it. And, I'm really happy that everybody likes it. You know, like I said, it is for the people of Cincinnati. If people didn't like Japs or Neons or Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, they wouldn't be around still. So I'd like to thank the city, and everybody here.
Well, you you're really becoming quite a fixture in over the Rhine, and this is expanding your footprint, if you may. Did you see this as another opportunity to share with the city?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm now learning about East Walnut Hills, and it's broadening my world, and I'm hoping that it broadens everybody else's world here in Cincinnati. It just makes our city a little bigger, once people, you kind of dust off, the years and wake the neighborhood up. I think it's really neat to see what happens. I love learning about this neighborhood. It's a pretty neat neighborhood. If you have not driven down Woodburn Avenue to Madison, do it. It is absolutely fantastic. That view of St. Francis de Sales just right down the street, it's a gorgeous part of our neighborhood that really needs to be recognized. So I'm excited to be a part of that.
Well, and it does seem that there are more and more of these little pockets of vibrancy that are coming back to life in Cincinnati.
I know. It's so lucky to live in a city that has preserved a lot of our history and landmarks and buildings. Not a lot of cities have that. We're really lucky. We just need to rediscover them in our time. It's pretty neat.
so Myrtle's Punch House, how will this be different there in East Walnut Hills than Japs or the Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, Neons?
Well, we're going to still keep kind of that same unpretentious, welcoming spirit that we have at all the bars. And we'll still have the educated bartenders that we have at each of the bars. I'm a big believer in knowing what you're selling. Mm-hmm. And what is different about this, though? We're still a neighborhood bar, just like all of our bars. You can still go in and get a gin and tonic. You can still go in and get, the beer that you love, But what's different is putting an emphasis on punch. Okay. Mm-hmm. So punch has been around for over 500 years. All right. People have been drinking out of the flowing bowl for a very long time.
Yes.
But this is really interesting. And it's not, people know punch usually, every, like my parents, they had a punch bowl they got from their, wedding. And, people get them for weddings, anniversaries, or what have you. And, you've seen them at, school dances. And, we always have my great-grandmother's punch bowl on, Christmas Eve,
I think I spiked a punch bowl or two when I was in high school, but we won't go there right now.
You know, it's you know, it's easy to do. Yes. But these recipes have been around for a long time, and it all stems from the history of a punch stems from the English sailors traveling to India. Punch is actually an Indian concept, and punch means five in Hindu. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and it's spelled a little differently. And don't ask me how to spell it because I'm not a very good speller. But if you look it up, you'll see. There are five basic ingredients that go into a good punch. One is of sour. One is of sweet. One is of spirit. One is of spice. And one is of water.
Hmm.
Kind of interesting. That's five things that you need. After you learn that, sky's the limit. Are you
kidding?
Really? I was
going to say, that just opens up. If you're just working that five, then you can have innumerable.
Exactly. So this concept of opening a punch house, it's all about this, you know, this community waking up and coming together and bringing friends and sharing a flowing bowl. Or if you're not into spirits, which, you know, as I've been opening bars and meeting more and more people, there's some people who just don't drink spirits. You know, they're really into beer, or they're into wine, or maybe they're not into alcohol at all. So I want to make sure that those people are taken care of as well. So we're going to put an emphasis on this flowing bowl, which you can, we're hoping to have where you can bring a bowl to your table and share it with your friends in little cups, you know, ladle it yourself. And then put an emphasis on a great wine list, wine by the bottle. So if you're into wine, you can still come. If you want to hang out with people who are drinking a punch bowl and you have, you know, your girlfriends or gentlemen friends, and you're like, I just want to drink a bottle of wine. You know, let's share that. Or if you're into beer, I mean, this is Cincinnati, you know, everybody's into beer. So we're going to put emphasis on, you know, pitchers of beer as well and growlers of beer. So that's where we're starting off. But this is my dream. And we're going to see how we can best put it into reality as we go on. But that is the concept, is bringing people together. So
Molly Wellman, the mixologist and owner of Japs, the Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, co-owner of Neons, and the soon-to-open Myrtle's Punch House up in East Walnut Hills. Also the author of Handcrafted Cocktails, the Mixologist's Guide to Classic Drinks for Morning, Noon, and Night. And I wanted to turn to the book right now, Molly, because really this is a forgotten art, I believe, and you have done just some fantastic work in bringing it back to life, including the history here in Cincinnati, where, you know, it's not like going to a chain restaurant and you get a blue margarita.
Right.
This is something entirely different. So what sets a mixologist from a bartender?
Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with a blue margarita, you know.
Okay, no,
I know. But I just want to be, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I walk into a brother like, oh God, there's Molly Wellman. She's going to ask for something really fancy that we're not going to be able to do.
And well, you ask for a blue margarita? Is that what
no.
you usually do?
Well, I was at Rio Grande last night and did have a margarita there. It was really good.
They make good margaritas.
Oh, they really do. It was really fun. I needed to have one too. You know, the difference between just a bartender and a mixologist. Well, first of all, we're all bartenders. If you're behind the bar and you're tending the bar properly, you're a bartender, okay? The difference is a mixologist will take it one step further. And this, like you said, it is a lost art. A lot of bartenders that go into this job usually think, oh yeah, I can pour stuff into a glass and then serve it to someone. Yeah, anyone can do that. But the difference is bringing this art back where the bartender knows what they're selling, you know, understands what the spirits are, how they're made, how to use them, you know, not just your regular drinks that any bartending school can teach you. They understand the history of the cocktail, why it became so popular, and you know, how to make it properly. And then, you know, conveying that information turns not just, you know, drinking a cocktail, it turns it into an experience then, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really what it should be all about. You're not just out some people might be out, like, to go out and just get hammered, but you know, some people are out for the experience. It's a social event and to meet other people and, you know, who knows, to learn something new. I always do.
Well, and I learn a lot, and especially, listening to you talk as often as I have, but also reading the book where You talk about the stories behind many of the drinks, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit of the history, and a little bit of the history behind cocktails as well. You know, what happened? This was 100 years ago. Cocktails were, you know, hot stuff and a true art. Where did the decline come, and where has the resurgence come from?
Well, that's an easy question. Between the 1860s all the way to, you know, Prohibition,
mm-hmm.
and even through Prohibition, I shouldn't stop there. It really probably, I would say, more towards like the 1950s, you started to see a decline in the creativity and the knowledge that went behind it. That had a lot to do with Prohibition too. But in the, you know, through the 1860s of Prohibition, really, you had these career bartenders who, you know, you're talking about like the whole reason why Prohibition went into effect. You had bars on every single corner. I mean, here in Cincinnati alone, we've always been a drinking town, and you can read in the book. I mean, we had over 1,800 bars in downtown Cincinnati alone.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, right where the whole Gateway Quarter is, in one block radius, there were 23 bars in a 23 bars in one block.
Oh,
oh my
wow.
Gosh, I could only imagine. So this is the 1880s. Those bartenders really had to be creative, okay? And they really needed to come up with some new drinks and, you know, fanfare to make it interesting for, you know, to attract people to come in. So you had a lot of drinks being created at that time. Some of them were better than others, I will tell you. I've tried some where I'm like, what in the heck were they thinking?
Right.
Dear Lord. But, you know, the majority of them were really, really good. And they used fresh ingredients. And, I mean, luckily here in Cincinnati, we were a river town, and we had access to anything that came down that river. So we could get different ingredients that we might not just have here, you know, locally. So that made a difference too, you know, and you know, you didn't have a bunch of artificial crap.
Right. There's a lot of that going around too. And
yeah.
That's what you notice when in your book, Handcrafted Cocktails,
mm-hmm.
is, well, whether it's making a certain type of simple sugar, simple syrup,
yeah.
or, you know, just the ingredients that are involved, they tend to be the fresh stuff, not, you know, artificially sweetened or whatever.
Exactly. Well, I went to nutrition school, so I'm really big on using artificial crap.
Good.
So anyway, then, you know, during Prohibition, you had limited access to really good liquor, not like how it was before Prohibition. And usually some of that liquor didn't taste all that great. So you had to get really creative in your blind pigs or speakeasies or even at your house to make those liquors be palatable. So you had a lot more sugar and juices going into the drinks and maybe a little sweeter. But they were also stronger because, you know, you wanted to get there faster.
Right.
You know, you couldn't just lollygag along, you know. You never knew when you were going to be busted. So that happened. Now, you know, during the 1950s is where you start seeing like a lot of, you know, people coming back from the war and marketing and business and, you know, money making and,
right.
you know, not putting so much care into the, you know, the quality ingredients. So you had a lot of kind of like a downfall there. And then everybody in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, they just wanted everything really sweet, I think.
Right. So those blue margaritas started coming
exactly.
up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I wanted to say that, you know, you talked about all the bars that were in Cincinnati, and you talk about in your book one mixologist who was mm-hmm. really a master of his craft,
yeah.
Charles Lawler, right?
Chris Lawler.
Chris Lawler.
Christopher L. Lawler. He was the mixologist of his time from in the 1880s and 1890s. He worked at some of the big hotels. There was the Grand Hotel, which is, you know, pretty much down the street, I believe, right at 3rd and Central, right across from the train station. And then the Burnett House, which if you have never read about the Burnett House here in Cincinnati, do yourself a favor and read about it. You'll be blown away how much history is a part of that hotel. That was on 3rd and Vine. And he also made his living from what I've read. I didn't know him. I only know what I've read.
Yes.
But he worked at many of the different bars around the city as well. He took it a step further. He wrote a cocktail book. And if you ever have the chance to pick this up, it was called The Mixicologist. Such a cool name,
mm-hmm.
I think. And he had some of his own creations, which when you look at them, they weren't all that exciting, but the names were really cool.
Well, that helps. That's a little marketing thing going
exactly.
there.
Exactly. But what's really cool about this book, and, you know, I wish I would have brought it so you could see it. is when you flip through this book, he pretty much paid for the publishing of doing this by using advertisements from different businesses in Cincinnati during the time of, you know, the 1880s and 1890s.
Wow.
So you flip through this book, even if you're not into cocktails or whatnot, you could see all these businesses that were around in Cincinnati at that time, their advertisements and stuff through the book. It's really neat. It really is a cool book. But he also wrote a newsletter, too, about wine and spirits. And I have yet to find that. I would love to find a copy of that. I think it would be fantastic. But really neat guy, you know, really neat guy.
Well, since you published a Handcrafted Cocktails, The Mixologist's Guide to Classic Drinks for Morning, Noon, and Night, what has the reaction been? I know you were at Books by the Banks. I saw you
yes,
at Books by the Banks. And
that was so fun.
You know, you get to meet all these readers. But what has been, you know, what has been the feedback you've been getting?
Oh, my goodness. It's been fantastic. Fantastic. I'd like to thank everybody. I'm so glad. Coming from a girl who's not a very good speller, and I don't believe in punctuation. I'm like E. Cummings, you know? If you ever read my posts on Facebook, you'll be like, what in the world? I like, get all those people who are really into English and grammar really upset because they're like, what is she thinking? But yeah, actually, the publisher contacted me and said, we want you to write a book. And that's exactly what I said. I'm like, I don't, you know, I'm not a very good speller. I never have been. I kind of just like gave up on that in my 30s. So, and they said, oh, no, we have people who can do that. And they're like, but you have the content. And I was like, this is a great opportunity. I think it'd be really fun to like share what I know with everyone. And I don't, there's only one thing that I keep to myself because, you know, girls has to have one piece of mystery.
Yes.
But I, you know, I keep one of my, you know, one or two of my recipes, you know, to myself, you know, like for a couple of my, you know, homemade syrups and bitters and whatnot. But for the most part, this is something that a lot of this stuff is stuff that I've learned from other books, you know. All I do is read, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, I've learned from other books or from other people, other historians, and, you know, going to our public library, which if you haven't been there in a while, please go in. We have the best library. It's awesome. And the people there are so cool.
Yes, they are.
They're so neat. You know, it's something that I mean, I love to share weird history with people and, you know, I think it's fantastic.
Well, no, and it is. And, you know, while you do have the recipes in there, I love all the stories that are intermingled, you know, about the drinks and,
yeah,
you know, discovering how this drink or that drink got its name. A martini was not a martini to begin with. It was a Martinez.
It was a Martinez and then a Martinique and then a martini. Yeah, it was an evolution. The martini was.
Yeah,
it's
but
kind
you
of
know,
funny
stories like that you found and that you share. Well, I wish you great success in all that you do. It seems that things are just on the upswing, Molly, and
you know,
doing some great stuff here in the city. Opening up. And the other thing that you make a point of and write early in the book here too is what you think a good bar is, and it's not one that has a bunch of big screen TVs blasting some sports channel, right?
No, it's funny. When I first opened Japs and I said, you know, I'm not going to put a TV in here. And there were two people in particular who said, you'll never make it, Molly. It'll never be a good bar. You have to have TVs in there to bring people in. And now it's almost been 3 years, so, and I haven't had a TV in there once. But yeah, I moved back to the city, which is my hometown. Cincinnati is my hometown. And I couldn't believe, I was like, why in the world does every single bar have a freaking TV?
Yes, it does.
I'm like, this is just, it's manic. I believe TV should be, you know, watched at home. You know, it's what you do when you're just like, all right, I have nothing else to do, you know? But when you're out, you're socializing with people. It's kind of rude, I think, to have that flashing, you know, constantly at you, unless you're at a sports bar. And I love sports bars. Mm-hmm. I love watching the Bengals and the Reds. Hey,
yes.
I'll go to a sports bar any day, but you know, when you're at a bar to like enjoy an experience, which I'm trying to create for you, we don't need that.
Molly Wellman, she's the owner of Japs, the Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, co-owner of Neons, and the soon-to-be-open Myrtle's Punch House in East Walnut Hills. Details about all those establishments, her work, and her book, Handcrafted Cocktails, The Mixologist's Guide to Classic Drinks for Morning, Noon, and Night, available through our website, wvxu.org.